the new batch. And now it is my pleasure to introduce tonight's speaker from Reedley with 32 years of sobriety, Tom W. Let's give it up for Tom.
Yes, my name's Tom W. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is August 23rd, 1986. Last Saturday I was 64 years old, and I'm sober for 32 years, so I've been sober half my life. I attended my first AA meeting when I was 20 years old. That was in 1974. That sounds crazy to me. So when I went to that meeting, this is what I want to share with the newcomers, is that you're not starting from scratch. When I went to that first meeting at 20 years old, I had much, much knowledge about drinking and alcoholism. I didn't have any knowledge about sobriety, but we all know what an alcoholic is when we get here, because we didn't just show up because we didn't have anything to do on a Wednesday night. So I was an expert, just like was read in chapter 3 that we just listened to. By the time I was 20 years old, I had done everything in chapter 3 to try to stop drinking, and I wasn't even aware there was a chapter 3 until I read it. But I remember, you know, in high school we used to hitchhike. That was back in the 60s. So we used to hitchhike like to Santa Cruz or to Yosemite Valley, and there wasn't all these rules, you know. You just went wherever you were going to go and you partied. So we were driving up there to Yosemite Valley, and there's this winery in Coarse Gold, and this girl I was with, she says, you know, if you drink natural wine, you will not get a hangover. And I said, whoa, that sounds like a good deal. I said, let's stop at the winery then. So I figured, okay, if you're not going to get a hangover, get 2 bottles of wine. Well, the next day I found out that what she was telling me wasn't accurate, because I was very sick the next day. But that's just something I really remember when I'm reading that big book, chapter 3 for the first time, that it's all coming back to me, all the things I did to try to stop drinking, and I was never successful. But I would run on the canal banks in Yuma, Arizona for miles and miles, and I was in very good shape. You know, I was an athlete. I'm a world-class swimmer when I was in high school and college. You know, but that didn't save me from alcoholism. I read lots of self-help books. That didn't save me from alcoholism. You know, and then I had this idea, well, you know, I was raised Catholic. I went to kindergarten at St. Therese School. So I know about that. But I said, you know, my problem is I don't go to church enough. So then I tried to go to church, you know, more. And then I tried to go to, and it didn't work. And then I tried to go to church every morning. And, you know, that's a lot of work to get up at 6 in the morning to go to Mass, you know, during the weekday when there's just, you know, 5 or 6 old ladies there and you, you know, a suffering alcoholic. Because being an active alcoholic is, you're in a mode of suffering. And I certainly was. I had mental anguish, and I had remorse, and I had regret, and I had guilt. And I didn't know how to get rid of any of that except to drink. So then one day the sister goes, well, would you like to teach Sunday school? And I said, well, yes, you know, because I'm thinking, well, yes, that will cure me, you know. So then I'm teaching Sunday school, and I'm teaching the kids about, you know, the Exodus. And they were, you know, they gave me the worst class, 5th and 6th graders, 5th and 6th graders. They're real, you know, 12, 13 years old. You know, they're all over the place, and they're, you know, they're not behaving. And I remember I'm talking about about the Exodus out of Egypt, and there's a sink, you know, if you've ever been in a classroom lately, there's sinks in the back room, and I'm looking at that sink, and I'm saying, you know what, I feel like I just want to walk back there and throw up in that sink. Because the problem with teaching Sunday school is it comes after Saturday night. So that didn't last too long, and it didn't cure me. So backtracking a little bit, I started drinking when I was 13 years old, and I enjoyed drinking. That first time I drank, I felt like an alcoholic feels. I call it a shortcut to happiness. I said, well, this is all I wanted. I just wanted to feel good. There's nothing wrong with wanting to feel good. You know, and that's the trap every alcoholic gets himself in. And I fell for it. By the time I was 16, I was an alcoholic, and I didn't know it, but I suspected something was wrong, but I didn't know till later when I read in the big book, it said, you know, there's an invisible line we cross, and it's after that, we're beyond human help. So I didn't know that I was placing myself beyond human help. And that's a difficult predicament to be in, because, as you say, I was raised in church, I was a Sunday school teacher, I read the Bible, I did all these things to try to cure my alcoholism, so that didn't work. So now what was I going to do? You know, I heard him talking about God when I went to that first AA meeting when I was 20 years old, and I just like, are you kidding me? You know, that's not what I need to hear. I already know all about that. And I don't ever remember him talking about steps or anything like that. And that's the way my alcoholic mind works. It's compartmentalized. I hear only what I want to hear. Now, I know they were reading the steps in the traditions at every meeting. I never was paying attention, I guess. So I went for a month. And then my birthday came up on November 10th. I went in October, early October, and I said, well, I have to go because I want to go out and get drunk with my brothers and whatnot. And so I had to drop out of AA. So I did, and I continued trying to control my drinking, and that is not the longest moment of silence. You may think you have the longest moment of silence at the beginning of your meeting, but my longest moment of silence was when I forgot to come home one night, and when I got home at 8 in the morning, my wife said, where have you been? And that was the longest moment of silence. Because I really did not know what to say, because I'm thinking, okay, well, last thing I remember is, I'm going to have like a few beers. And then, you know how it talks about in the big book, then we end up pounding our fist on the bar saying, how did I get in this situation again? Oh, well, what the hell? Might as well keep drinking. And I had instances of doing that a few times, and that's hard to explain. And I've been married for 41 years, so and I'm talking about married to the same woman for 41 years. So there's not a lot of people around in my life that have even seen me drink. You know, there's one guy in high school that I still see, and we used to, you know, drink together. And then there's my wife, because my kids, you know, my oldest child is 38 years old, and I have two sons, one's 36 and one's 29, and they've never seen me drink. And they used to ask me when they were younger, they didn't understand. They said, Dad, why are you still go to those meetings? You're really weird. You don't have to do that. And I go, well, no, I have to go to the meetings because mailman Bill told me when I first sobered up, he says, you have to go to meetings until you want to go to meetings, and then you don't have to go to meetings anymore. And he was doing that to tease me, because I said, what? And he said, you have to go to meetings until you want to go to meetings, and you don't have to go to meetings anymore. And he would tell me that every time I saw him, until finally I understood what he was saying. Oh, I get it. Okay. Because I had asked him, I said, hey, how long do we have to go to these meetings? And then I'd ask him, hey, do I have to bring my book? And he goes, oh, yeah, you got to bring your book. And I said, yeah, what do I have to do? And he goes, oh, you got to read that thing. You know, and every time you come to a meeting, you have to bring it. And then after a while, I was like, well, I don't see anybody else bringing their book to me. And I said, well, how long do I have to do this? And he goes, well, for most people, you know, they'll sober up in, you know, 2 or 3 years, but for you, it's going to be 5 or 6 years. And so he was, what do they say, punking me? Is that what they say? Yeah, he was trolling me. Yeah, they had trolling way back then. So anyway, I had gone to the horse races with my dad and brothers, and you know, my dad was a boxer, and I have, you know, 5 brothers, so there's 6 boys, so the way we related to each other is we've gotten fist fights and we drank. That's what we did. I mean, that's how we related. There's no hugging in our family like that, you know. And once I sobered up, I met my dad and my brothers at the airport because we were going to go up to Reno, you know, and play some craps and stuff. And I got off the plane and I see my dad, and I give my dad a hug, and my brothers go, hey, you can't hug dad, what the fuck, dude? You know, the way, excuse my language, but they were like, dude, what are you doing? You know, and I'm here to tell you, it wasn't but 5 years later that everybody was hugging everybody, because they liked it, you know. You know how you take a little chance and go outside your comfort zone? That's what the program's all about, is going outside your comfort zone. Now, I'm going to tell you something that I believe is true. I don't really give a shit what you did. Your 4th step is your business, and your 5th step's your business. So why would you care about telling me or writing a 4th step if that would help you? It's not about me. I had to do my own. See, people aren't here to judge you. They're here to help guide you to find the spiritual release that we all found and we want to pass it on. That's why I'm here tonight. You know, that's why I still go to meetings 32 years after being sober. By the way, I lost 5 years before that. You know, because I had a few drinks in between in a 5-year period. You know, but, you know, we say one day at a time, that's true. You know, but I'll tell you something else. You know, well, you got up early, you have more sobriety than me. Well, maybe you do, I don't know. But I'll tell you something else. Try telling that to my wife and kids. They're appreciative that I've been sober 32 years. And they don't even know. Do you know that my wife doesn't even really understand what alcoholism is? She's been in Al-Anon for over 30 years. But I can tell by the things that she says sometimes, oh, you don't really get it, do you? You know, and I say that to myself because I'm not in any way denigrating the Al-Anon program. I mean, my job is to stay sober, and her job is to not care if I'm sober or not and live her own life. And that's kind of the way it works in our household. You know, I'll tell you something that I normally don't say, is that I was complaining to my sponsor. And this was in early sobriety. And I say, I wish you would just shut her bitch mouth up. That's what I wish. And Mike goes, well, what's going on? I said, I'm sick of her. You know, no matter what I do, she wants to criticize it. You know, she doesn't care if I'm in AA or not drinking or not. Now, I've been sober for a couple of years, you know, and she's got all the answers and this and that. You know what Mike said, my sponsor? He goes, the next time she starts that, Tom, why don't you just say, hey, if you're so smart, why did you marry me? And so I said, ooh, yeah, that's a good comeback. Now I know I have a sponsor. And she starts, you know, criticizing me, you know, and saying stuff. And it's like, hey, that's uncalled for, you know, but that, she doesn't care, you know. I said, well, hey, if you're so smart, then why did you marry me? And she didn't really have an answer for that. So then I said, hey, I'm getting somewhere. And then I really let her have it. I said, hey, I was walking down the street, you know, in front of my high school, Hoover High School in Fresno. You went to McLean. You were driving by, and you go, oh, he looks cute. I wonder who he is. Her and her girlfriends, they were, they were cruising a different high school. And, you know, here I am walking down the street. My hair was this long because we wear it real long in back then, you know. And I had a leather motorcycle jacket on and boots and jeans. And I walk like, you know, just don't look at me, man. Don't even think about it. That's how I walk down the street with a cigarette. And she goes, oh, he looks cute. What the hell is wrong with her? And that's what I told her. And then she had to go to her sponsor to get a response because she didn't have one. So then we started learning how to mind our own business. See, and you concentrate on your program, and I'll concentrate on my program. And I remember one time she really pissed me off. And I says, hey, you don't talk to me like that. You know, and then I was really mad, and she knew it because I said, I don't give a shit about AA. You think AA is going to save you now? It's not going to save you because you don't freaking talk to me like that. You know, see, a lot of times people don't appreciate the way I share things like that, but I do. I do because, you know, if you grew up in a dysfunctional home and you were in dysfunctional relationships, then that's to put, what I'm showing you is putting it mildly. There can be broken furniture and all kinds of stuff going on. And that's the background I come from. See, so, you know, turning my life over to a God of my own understanding, that really helped me out because I was headed in the wrong direction. And I remember I was sitting in church and I was saying, okay, I said, this really isn't fair. All of the things that I've done, you know, and you're still making me an alcoholic, God. I said, I know what you want. You just want me to stop drinking. And I said, guess what? I've been trying to stop drinking. I would quit drinking if I could. I can't quit. How about that? So now what am I supposed to do? And that's a prayer. That's being honest with God. That's telling God, I've tried everything I know how. Maybe the next week I ended up in an AA meeting. So we don't know it at the time, but that was really the answer to my prayer. So this is my question to you. You know, it's very scary when you're talking about God and, you know, you feel like people have let you down, God's let you down, God doesn't care about me, you know, and so I really don't care about God. You know, He's never done anything for me. You know, but what we're saying in the program at Alcoholics Anonymous, the spiritual program, not the religious program, you know, because your beliefs are of your own choosing, but I suggest that you choose a God that is very powerful. Because if you're right now working on your fourth step, and you're working on your fourth step, and it's been a while, the reason you're not doing your fourth step is because you haven't done the third step. That's why they're in order. Because I'm just relating to you what happened to me. You know, with all my religious training, I didn't get it. I didn't do the fourth step because I didn't have faith until my sponsor showed me the way. I was complaining. I don't know what I was telling him. I was telling him complaining about something, and he goes, oh, gee, I'm sorry, Tom. And that sounded kind of sarcastic. You don't talk to me sarcastically like that, sir. That's what I was thinking. I know, but I wouldn't say it because he's my sponsor. You don't say that to your sponsor. Oh, yes, sir. And then he says, well, what do you mean? And he goes, well, I don't, my higher power could handle that. I guess you have like some kind of a weaker higher power or something. And I said, whoa, dude, no, I don't. My higher power is like a superhuman higher power. You know, but the point I'm making is he let me understand that I'm choosing my higher power. I can choose to say my higher power has the answers for all my needs. I think I read that in the big book, that my higher power has the answer to all my needs. So I took that as an act of faith that I said, okay, and I used that. And I says, okay, well, yeah, no, my higher power can handle that too. And he goes, okay then, that's it. Problem solved. You know, so if there's something that you want out of life, it might be, well, it would be nice if somebody would just love me, even though I'm an asshole. That would still be nice, you know. Or it would be nice if I had this or if I had that, you know. I'm going to challenge you to just ask God for that then. What you want, you can ask God for in prayer, and you don't have to tell anyone, because that's personal between you and God. So if you don't have a higher power and you don't have a spiritual program, that's going to end up being your own fault, because nobody's asking you to say, hey, you, get up here and tell us all about God. Nobody's asking that. You know, you can go in your bathroom, shut the door, lock the door, turn off the light, and say, get on your hands and knees and say, God, would you please help me? I don't know what to do. What's wrong with that? What keeps every human being from doing that? It's ego. Ego keeps you from doing that. You know, as they say, well, you have to find humility, you know. Well, humility is admitting that you're an alcoholic, your life is unmanageable, and you need God to restore sanity to your life. Because I'm telling you, you had enough time to do that and you haven't done it. You failed at it. You failed at sobriety. So all you have to do is make a decision that you don't want to be a failure anymore and turn that over to people that are more capable of handling it. That would be ask God for help. God will put the right person in your life and these people will help you. My friends are here tonight. 1, 2, 3, 4. I have 5 friends that traveled out here on a rainy Wednesday night from Fresno, sitting here because we support each other in this endeavor to live a more spiritual life and to grow in spirituality and to grow in the program and to be responsible with our lives. But that's hard to do. But we can teach you how to do that. But we're not going to follow you around. This program is free. But you know how they say in the wildlife programs, well, it's survival of the fittest. You ever heard that? Well, in Alcoholics Anonymous, it's survival of the willing. We need to be willing. We're willing. I saw, well, you said something about raise your hand or if you need help, this or that, and come up and get a chip. You have to be willing to do that, you know. And believe me, when you're doing that and you're uncomfortable, we're not uncomfortable with it. We're used to it. So don't think about it. That's coming. That vibe's coming from you. It's not coming from us. We're here to help. You know, we're here to freely give what was given to us. You know, what do we do? What kind of service work do we do? Well, we come to speaker meetings. You know, we go to the treatment facilities. We go visit the prisoners in county jail. Yeah, we do that. All of us guys do it. We go on Thursday nights to Fresno County Jail. And we say, hey, what's up, dude? You know, we say, yeah. And I tell them, what do I tell them? I say, oh, you guys got it so good in here. Bunch of crybabies. And then they look at me like, hey, that old dude's funny. And I say, oh, no. I was in here over 30 years ago, 35, whatever, 40 years ago. And, you know, it wasn't this nice. I don't believe it was this nice. And then I start talking, and then that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to relate, and we're trying to win your confidence so that you understand that what you're going through, we went through. I wasn't born with 32 years sobriety. I was a drunk son of a bitch that was suicidal and sometimes homicidal before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, yeah, I can fit in with any crowd here. You know, how they have gang members nowadays and it's all the rage and that's really cool? Fuck that. Do you know what a hood is? I was a hood. You know what a hood is? A hood will hurt you if you mess with them. You go to Taco Bell with your nice little car or truck, you know, and if I'm out there and I'm drinking and I'm having tacos and you look at some girl I like or something, you better watch out. You know, because that's the way it was back then. We would go, you know, but we don't do that anymore. I don't hit people anymore. That's not allowed. In the program at AA, you can't hit anyone. Let me clarify that. You're not even supposed to cuss at them. You're not even supposed to call them names or anything like that. You know, and it does. That's why I make it sound funny, because it's just ridiculous, some of the things that I've said. Absolutely ridiculous. I'm not the same person as when I came in here. I'm a much softer, gentler asshole than I used to be. But anyway, I'll tell you a story about when I went to the AA meeting when I sobered up. I haven't had a drink since then. I owned one of those Golden Corral steakhouses, those big, big restaurants of 400 seats. And, you know, yeah, I was hot shit, you know. I mean, you know, come on. And I walked in the back door one morning, and I'm just walking down the long hallway there, and I get to the dish sink, and you know how the paper towel's up there? And on the top of the paper towel, there's a little, one of those little airline bottles of vodka that was empty. And I look at that, and I'm very smart. I said, somebody's been drinking in here. You know, it's kind of like Goldilocks. So I walk up to the cook's window there where you pass the food out, and I see Laura in the dining room, opening waitress, head waitress, all this. And I says, hey, Laura, who's been drinking in here? I said, I found this little bottle. And she goes, oh, boss, that's Otto. He likes to drink. I think he forgot to throw that away. And I said, well, I'll tell you what. I said, you get on the phone and you tell Otto to get his ass down here. I'm very self-righteous drunk, you know, but I was sober, so that's why I was. So she goes, okay, boss, I will. And she calls and he says, he'll be down here at 10 o'clock. And I get in my car and I drive back home and I march into my room and I get in that closet and I grab my big book. It was in the top shelf of in the closet there in the master bedroom. So I says, I get it. And I go, oh, whoa. I'm not kidding you. There was an eighth inch of dust on that thing. And I got that book when I was 20 years old, you know. Or no, when I was 26. Now I'm 31. And it had 5 years of dust on it. But I knew where it was, and I got it, and I marched back down to work, and I said, Otto, I'm going to tell you something. You're either going to go to AA tonight with me, or you're going to be fired. Okay? That's good service work. So, I said, because I used to be a drunk, and I ain't a drunk anymore. And he goes, okay, boss. Oh my God. So we go, it's a Monday night, and we go on Monday night, and I sit down, and I look at the guy right across from me. He's a regular customer. His name's Gary. He's been sober 10 years. I didn't know any of this. All I knew was he drove a Jeep, and it had one of those Easy Does It stickers. I go, that guy, I know that sticker. That guy's an AA, I think. You know, so yeah, he was there, and I go, what are you doing here? And of course, the big joke, he's just waiting for you. So, now that's a true story. So, I go to that meeting, Otto moves to New York the next day, but when I was, that was on Tuesday, but on Monday, when I'm at that meeting, I heard them talking about God, and I said, I don't remember them talking about God. You know, the last time I was here. Now, in between this time, you know, I had already tried AA, and I was sober. I wasn't drinking, right? So I'm like, oh, why go to AA? So I'm like, okay, but I had to go to marriage counselor. I had to go to a psychologist. I had to go to a psychiatrist. You know, and things weren't getting any better. So I just ended up at that AA meeting, and I heard him talking about God, and I said, you know what, I don't remember that. And I've been going to AA ever since, because the light bulb went on. You know, they say don't leave before the miracle happens. I got out of there before the miracle happened, but God guided me back there because I was willing. God knew I was willing. God knew I wanted to do the right thing. God knew I wanted to increase my spiritual life. You know, because why would you go to a marriage counselor if you didn't want to? Or why would you go to a psychiatrist if you didn't want to improve yourself? Or why would you go to a psychologist if you didn't want to improve yourself? So God saw that I was making an effort, and he arranged it so that Otto would have a drink, you know, and I would take him to a meeting. You know what that's called? That's called two-stepping. That's in one of the AA books. I don't know which one, but that's what I was. I was a two-stepper. It's like, okay, I sobered up. You know, if you need help, go to AA. That's the first step in the 12th step. I'm an alcoholic. I'll help you if you need help. But anything in between, no. Don't need that. I'm not stupid. You know, I know what you guys are doing. You know, and I don't need to do that. And I continued that theme. You know, in sobriety, I went to that meeting, and it wasn't shortly thereafter, maybe a couple of months or something, I became the secretary. Yes, I took over the meeting. You know, because, you know, you should hear me speak. I was brilliant. You know, and then I was the secretary, and then I was, oh, yeah, I can be the treasurer, too. Hey, I'm already here. You know, and then, service work? Yeah, well, it's service work. I'm on the board of directors of the Chamber of Commerce. I'm in the Rotary Club service work. Sure. What do you want me to do? Oh, could you go to the jail with us, Tom? I said, yeah, I can go to the jail with you. Are you kidding me? You know, and I go down to the jail, and I'm talking at the jail, and there's like six people there, and, you know, and then pretty soon there's like 18, 19, 20 people, and I say, yeah, you're damn right. You better show up if I'm talking tonight. And then I go in there one Saturday, and it's like, okay, there's one person here. And I look at the guard, and I'm pissed off at the guard. I say, hey, you know, what's going on? He goes, oh, well, Tom, they changed. Before there wasn't nothing to do on this night, but now they turned it into movie night. And so, I, you know, I mean, that's what my alcoholic personality tells me. He tells them, well, they're here to hear me, you know. The other people come and speak on the jail panel, but they don't get a crowd like this, you know. So that was kind of, that's how they, what they call that ego deflation. You know, so I'm doing all this stuff. I have a big book, and it's not dusty. I am reading it. I have a 12 and 12 book, and I read that too. You know, and then I'm after the meeting, and you know, I'm just fiddling, counting the money or something. And then Mike sits on this side, and Orman sits on this side. And these guys are, they're retired. They've been sober a long time. And they're retired, and they go, he goes, Tom, we're going to help you out. One of us is going to be your sponsor. Now, mind you, I've been going to that meeting for a year and a half. I didn't have a sponsor, and I didn't take shit from anyone. You know, you're not in charge here. I am. So, I mean, you know, and I'm not saying that I'm consciously thinking that, but, you know, they saw it. They knew what was going on. They knew that things weren't getting better in my life, you know, that I was an emotional roller coaster. So they say, well, one of us is going to be your sponsor. And I go, oh, is that right? And then Mike speaks up. He goes, hey, can I come and meet with you tomorrow? And I said, well, tomorrow's Tuesday? I said, no, I'm busy tomorrow. And he goes, okay, can I come and meet with you on Wednesday? And I said, no, I'm busy on Wednesday. But at the same time, I'm thinking he's going to ask me if he can come on Thursday. And if I say no, he's going to ask me if I can come on Friday. Because, you know, I'm alcoholic. I'm not stupid, okay? So he says, well, can I come and meet you on Wednesday? And I go, well, okay. And I go, okay, well, come down at 10 o'clock on Wednesday. And it might have been Thursday because I turned them down quite a bit. But anyway, that was Monday night. So now I got all this time. Is he really going to come? And I'm thinking, you're damn right he's going to come. I know he's going to come. And sure enough, this great big old Irish guy, you know, he looks like W.C. Fields, you know, and here he comes strolling through the parking lot at 10 o'clock on Wednesday morning, and he's showing up, and I sit at a table in the back, and he sits across from me, and he goes, so, and I go, well, you know, we know each other. I mean, we've been going to this meeting for a year and a half together, and he says, you know, so what's going on? And tell me a little bit about how your life's going. You know, so I'm talking to him, and he goes like, oh, you're selfish. I said, hey, I'm thinking to myself, I think he just said I'm selfish. Because he's saying it under his breath, you know. And, you know, and I'm talking, you know, and then I'm talking some more and telling him some stuff. And he says, you're self-centered. And then shortly after that, yes, he said, you're dishonest. And I said, have you been calling me names under your breath? Because it sounds to me like you call me selfish, self-centered, and dishonest. And I said, I'm going to tell you something, Mike. I said, I don't give a shit about AA. And now you're really pissing me off. Because I've done every fucking thing I've been told to do in here. And I felt better when I was drinking than I do in Alcoholics Anonymous. So how do you like that, dude? And I was telling him off good, man. I was saying, you know, he didn't care one bit. You know, I'm not intimidating him or anything. You know, but I'm sure spouting off and using bad language. You know, I cleaned it up. I'm sorry about the F-bombs and stuff, but that was the clean version, believe me. You know, I go, well, I don't know what I'm supposed to do or I would be doing it. Why do you always have to talk in riddles? Why can't you just tell me what to do? feeling all right? You ever felt that way? Like, you know, I'm trying to do the right thing. I'm here. And I started telling him off again because I was really mad. I said, hey, I'm going to give you a heads up, dude. And I didn't really say it like that because we didn't talk like that back then. It was a different kind of jargon. But I said, I'm going to tell you something. When I came to AA, when I came to that meeting, I had keys. I knew how to open the door. And I knew how to read, okay? And I knew how to count money, okay? I knew how to make coffee and clean ashtrays. So you didn't teach me a fucking thing, did you? How about that? How would you like to have a sponsee like me? Your very first meeting. It wasn't fun, but then he said, okay, this is what I want you to do. Tell me what's bothering you. Tell me five things or people that bother you. I said, well, my wife bothers me. And he goes, okay, something else. I said, well, my job bothers me. And I said, well, what else? AA bothers me. He goes, okay, that's enough. Okay, so that's what we're going to work on. Now we're going to be done here today. And the next time you get upset, you pick the phone up and call me. And I'll come over and we'll talk. And that's how he came to be my sponsor. But you know why? I would have fired him right then and there. But he said, you know what? I don't blame you for being upset at your wife. And I know you have your full plate. And I understand what you're going through. He goes, you really have a lot of responsibility, Tom. And I'm like, yeah, dude, that's what I've been trying to say. So he just related to me, sucked me in, and then turned me into this beautiful spiritual being that I am today. So, I will tell you this, is that the moral of my story is I could not figure it out by myself. And I was accomplished. I quit drinking young. I did all these things, but I could not figure out how to stay sober and serene. I couldn't find serenity by myself. I needed somebody else to help me, somebody else to guide me. And back in those days, you could sit there. I mean, I was like a miracle that they asked me, because they don't ask you. You got to ask somebody to be your sponsor. But they were so sick of me that they said, okay, one of us is going to sponsor you because you're not catching on, guy. So I'm grateful for that. I see we only have about 4 minutes left, so I will just say an encouraging word. Thank you so much for having me speak here. I hope you heard something, and just be aware that you're always welcome at Alcoholics Anonymous. You don't have to be perfect. I don't have to be perfect. We just have to be willing. Thank you very much.